My wife suggested I should put my jacket on and be presentable. So, before I begin, I would like to also add my congratulations to one of my best and brightest, and that would be Richard Davis. Richard is a heathen, you know. He's from Heath, Kentucky. One of our truly outstanding graduates, and so way to go, Richard, and congratulations to you, young man. Oldham County, I know where this is. Used to have the women's prison there, Pee Wee Valley. Yeah. In fact, one of my wife's classmates did some time up there. It was interesting. They had their 10th year reunion, and Melinda was wondering, what is the protocol? Do you send an invitation anyway, even though I suggested she send the woman a cake with a file in it, but in any event, so let me begin by assuring you that, unlike Richard and my other students, I will not subject you to my normal hour and 15-minute lecture, but I also won't test you on what I have to say this evening. But this is a passion of mine, is Kentucky politics. Time-wise, Kentucky politics was dominated by the three B's: bombast, burgoo, and bourbon. I will begin by examining each of these ingredients singularly. I will conclude by blending them into what I consider to be the greatest of all Kentucky political stories. I define bombast as the high political art of using many words to say little or nothing. Bombast gives special meaning to the last four lines of Judge James Hillary Mulligan's immortal poem In Kentucky. If you want to jump in on the last line, you may do so. I encourage it. Mountains tower proudest, thunder peals the loudest, the landscape is the grandest, and politics the damnedest in Kentucky. Can I get a Baptist amen from that? Thank you. I was reared Presbyterian. We're the frozen chosen. We don't do amens. Examples of bombast in Kentucky history are as plentiful as grains of sand in the Ohio River. But the best example I can give you comes from the first Republican governor Kentucky had, William O. Bradley, elected in 1895. He was one of the greatest stump orators Kentucky had, and believe you me, Kentucky has had its share of great stump orators. It is called Mullen's Famous Speech. And Mullins was a fictitious lawmaker from Estill County over in eastern Kentucky. Anybody know where Estill County is? Irvine, Kentucky? That's eastern Kentucky. Now, we western Kentuckians define eastern Kentucky in a unique way. For example, not too long ago, over in Mayfield where I live, this fellow said, "Do you know so-and-so?" I said, "Don't believe I do." He said, "Well, he's from over in eastern Kentucky around Madisonville." That's a purchased patriot all the way. In any event, the fictitious Representative Mullins from Estill County had gone down to Frankfort on a Kentucky River steamboat called the Blue Wing, and he came back, and he endeavored to give his constituents an accounting of what he had done for them in our state capital. And this is what he said, according to Governor Bradley. "Fellow citizens, when you elected me to the legislature, I wish that I might have the tallest pine tree that growed in the mountains, so that I might strip the limbs from the same and make it into an enormous pen and dip it in the waters of the Kentucky River right across the clouds. God bless the people of Estill County." "After you elected me, I went down to Frankfort on the Blue Wing, and as we wended our winding sinuosities amidst its labyrinthian meanderings, the birdlets, the batlets, and the owlets flew out of their secret hiding places and cried out to me in loud voices, 'Sail on, Mullins, thy proud defender of thy country's liberties.' When I reached Frankfort, I went up into the legislature hall, and there I spied many purty purlicues a-hanging from the ceiling, to pay for which you had been shamefully robbed of by unjust taxation. When matters of small importance were before the body, I lay like a bull pup, a basket in the sunshine with a blue bottle fly tickling his nose. But when matters of importance come up, I rise from my seat like the Numidian lion of the desert, shook the dewdrop from my mane, and gave three shrill shrieks for liberty. Bombast, bombast, bombast. It was in full flower in the 1976 session of our August General Assembly. The state Senate was debating a weighty measure to establish an official state insect. Kentucky had gone all these years without one. It was time to have one. And so this debate began. Senator Eugene Stewart, a Republican of Prospect, that's up your neck of the woods, is it Prospect? He made two proposals on the floor of the Kentucky State Senate. The first one suggested that House Speaker Norbert Blum, a Louisville Democrat, be the state insect. In a spirit of bipartisanship, he proposed a second bill that would nominate Senator Larry Hopkins, a Republican of Lexington, to be state bug. And debate began. Senator Mike Maloney, a Democrat of Lexington, rejected Hopkins as state bug for humanitarian reasons. He said, "I see great danger that somebody might step on Senator Hopkins and make the Republicans even more of a minority in the legislature." Senator Richard Weisenberg, a Democrat of Mayfield, sided with Senator Maloney. He said, "I am somewhat of an environmentalist, and I am concerned about endangered species like Republicans." Even so, the Senate Majority Leader Tom Garrett, a Democrat of Paducah, broke party ranks, and in a spirit of bipartisanship, he hyped Hopkins. He said, and I quote, "Anytime you can turn an elephant into an insect, it would be an improvement." Senator Stewart got the last word. He said, and I quote him faithfully, "The elephant itself is a magnificent, gorgeous animal. But I'm hard pressed to find anything of beauty about a jackass." We do have an official state insect in Kentucky. It is not Norbert Blum or Larry Hopkins. Anybody know what it is? It's the Viceroy butterfly. Aren't you proud to be a Kentuckian? And Dr. Streeter, aren't you sorry you're not? Storytelling is a lost art in Kentucky politics. And I once asked Governor Julian Carroll, who is also a heathen from Heath, he's now Senator Carroll from Frankfort, what killed it. He said, "Television did. You can't give a stump speech in 30 seconds. You can't tell a story in a minute." But this was one of his favorites. There was this politician who was faced with an issue that all politicians dread, where the voters are 50-50 split on it. Either way he comes down, he alienates half the voters. And this man dreaded, like the plague, having to come down on this issue. Well, people kept after him. They kept after him. And finally he says, "All right, at 2 o'clock next Saturday, I am going to reveal my position on this issue." And sure enough, the time came, and the people gathered, and the media came, and the politician stood before the crowd. And the first thing he did was outline the issue. And then he said, "You ask me, my fellow citizens, some of my friends are for it, and some of my friends are against it. Where do I stand? With my friends." One of the greatest stump speakers Kentucky ever had was Albin Barkley. Now, the McCracken Countyans claim him, which we let him do that. He did achieve his political fame from McCracken County. He was a member of Congress, vice president, Senate majority leader. But he was born in Grays County, my home county, in the community of Wheel. Y'all know where Wheel is? Well, it's between Fancy Farm and Lowe's, of course. This story was given to me by a woman in Clinton who actually heard Barkley tell this story. And I've collected these for years, people all the time say, "Did you hear the one about such and such?" And so this was one of his favorites. It's called The Preacher and the Jug. There was this Kentucky sheriff out patrolling one day, and he noticed up ahead on the road was this automobile that was weaving in and out of traffic, obviously. The driver was under the influence of some alcoholic libation, and the sheriff stopped the car. He walked over to the car, and he was horrified to see behind the wheel a minister of the gospel of a certain church that absolutely forbids alcoholic beverages from crossing the lips of its members. Not Presbyterian, I assure you. Well, he didn't know what to make of this. And so he looked in the car, and he saw a jug sitting on the seat. "Preacher, what's in that jug?" "Water." "Really?" "Yep, it's water." "You don't mind if I have a look?" What's he going to say? He's the sheriff. Sheriff picked up the jug, uncorked it, took a whiff. It was moonshine. And he says, "Preacher, there's alcohol in that jug." And the preacher says, "Praise Jesus, he's done it again." One of Barclay's all-time favorites. The other is the story. This comes from Letcher County over in eastern Kentucky. You all know where Letcher County is? Whitesburg. It's about as far east as Kentucky goes. And this is the story of Fess Whitaker. I am privileged to know Fess Whitaker's great-great nephew, and I really feel privileged. He's from Whitesburg over in eastern Kentucky, as I said. Well, Fess Whitaker was one of the great heroes of the Spanish-American War. He was one of Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders. Oh, yes. He was a corporal, but he was Teddy's best soldier, and Teddy knew it. And so right before the fateful charge up San Juan Hill, he called Fess over and said, "Corporal Whitaker, we've got to take that hill." He said, "Colonel, it's as good as took." "But Fess," he said, "there must be a million Spaniards up there. I don't care. We're going to take that hill." Well, you historians know what happens. The hill was taken. Bloody, bloody fight. The hill is taken. On the top of the hill, battle smoke clears. The American flag is planted. Colonel Roosevelt sees with great relief that Corporal Whitaker has survived this fearsome battle. And he walked over to the corporal, and he said, "Corporal Whitaker, this day will live in the annals of American military history forever." And he said, "Yes, Colonel, it will." And he said, "And Fess, you know, one of us is destined to be President of the United States." And Corporal Whitaker said, "Yes, Colonel, that is true. That is true. But I'll tell you what. You go ahead and be president. All I want to be is jailer of Letcher County, Kentucky." And he got elected. Well, after his first term, he got crosswise with the county judge. Both Republicans. And the county judge put a candidate up against him in the Republican primary. And Fess went to the judge and said, "Judge, did you put him up to run against me?" And the judge said, "Yes, I did." So Fess did the honorable thing, hit the judge in the mouth, and was thrown in his own jail, and was reelected from behind the bars of his own jail. There is a famous photo in the Courier Journal archives of Fess Whitaker peeking through the bars saying, "Vote for me." Now, how true is this story? Well, Fess Whitaker did join the Rough Riders in 1899 after the war was over, and he was a cook. But all's fair in Kentucky politics, isn't it? Absolutely. Here's another story Barclay loved to tell. There was this young man who was considering matrimony, and so he wrote a trusted relative for advice. And he wrote, "I want to marry this girl. I have told her about my father who is in the pen, my brother who is in the insane asylum, and my sister who is a prostitute. I have not told her about my cousin who is a Republican, should I?" Now, to be fair about this, this is another story Governor Bradley enjoyed. He was elected in 1895, and naturally the Republicans swooped it up. It was their first governor. Why wouldn't they? And so the Republicans were celebrating in this Kentucky town with a big parade through the town. And just as this procession passed this young woman's house, she claimed that on her front porch, her date had repeatedly hugged and kissed her against her will. She said, "I hardly knew the man and had him arrested." And so into court this went. And when the woman testified against him in court, his attorney cross-examined him. "What night was this?" "Thursday night." "What time of night?" "About 8 o'clock. "That was the time the big parade was passing your house?" "Yes, sir." "Did you cry out or scream?" "No, sir, I did not." Now, at this point, the lawyer's dander is up. And he says, "Will you tell this jury, with the streets thronged with people, and this man hugging and kissing you against your wishes, as you claim, why you did not utter a single cry?" "Yes, sir." "You'll never catch me holler at no Republican gathering." Burgoo. Dr. Clardius, you enjoyed that, did you not, sir, Burgoo? Outstanding. I'm glad to hear that. Outstanding. Good stuff. What is Burgoo? It's a stew. What's in it? What you got? It's just meat, roadkill, whatever you got, vegetables. It's rather tame nowadays. But basically, it's Irish stew, Brunswick stew. It's all the same thing. We call it Burgoo. Now, listen. If you are fancy, you call it Burgoo. But if you're down Hope, Kentucky, it's Burgoo. In fact, it was so popular that political rallies were called Burgoos. "We're going to have a Burgoo for Senator so-and-so or Congressman such-and-such." Now, here's a possibility for next year's hammock dinner. If you want to, you could just have a Burgoo. And I have the recipe for it right here that I'll be happy to give it to you. It's in my book. Either way, here's what you start with. 3,000 pounds of beef, 1,000 pounds of pork, 1,000 ears of corn, 40 bushels of carrots, 40 bushels of onions, a bushel of red peppers, 40 gallons of peas, 480 cans of tomatoes, and a gallon of garlic. That was the Burgoo held in 1931 in Mayfield, my hometown, for the Democratic candidate for governor, Ruby Lafoon. What a great name for a governor, isn't it? Ruby Lafoon. He was from Madisonville, Hopkins County. And a few years ago, they were going to name a high school for him. Well, the kids rioted almost. We're not going to Lafoon High. And I believe it's Hopkins Central High School. Any Hopkins Central graduates or know where that school is? That could have been Lafoon High School. Anyway, what would you call us? A Lafooniac or a Lafooner? I don't know. In any event, this was all slow cooked over 54 iron kettles. Over smoky blazes that made the Mayfield Messenger mindful of, quote, Chicago after a certain historic cow had kicked over a lantern and set fire to 2,000 acres of property. That's good journalism, that. Bourbon is the third B of Kentucky politics. Nowadays, when the polls are open, the liquor stores are closed. For good reason. A lot of mayhem has been committed under the influence of spirituous liquids on election days in Kentucky. We take our politics pretty seriously. In early Kentucky, woe be unto any lawmaker who tried to pass laws against whiskey. Amos Kendall, the famous Kentucky editor who became Andrew Jackson's confidant, said the secret to success in Kentucky politics is to, quote, drink whiskey and talk loud with the fullest confidence. A Kentucky statesman is a politician who could, quote, drink grog all day without getting drunk. That is a gift. That is a real gift. It is. Now, in the olden days, many a vote was swayed and outright bought with liquor. Campaign expenses in early Kentucky included a bill for whiskey. Early in Kentucky, we voice voted. Now, there are certain advantages to that that are obvious. If you're running for office, you know how you're doing. You're going to know how much whiskey you need to buy. Or how many, well, you also, we had to carry what we call voter education committees. They were all men
over 6 feet tall, over 200 pounds, and they would gather around the poles, picking their teeth with bowie knives and tapping clubs in their hands. That was your voter education committee. Now, on the other hand, if you voted correctly, you could have the whiskey and also ginger snaps. Now, I find that fascinating, and that was told to me by Thomas D. Clark, who was Dr. Hammock's professor at UK. Ginger snaps. Whiskey and ginger snaps. You might try that at your next faculty party. Just a suggestion there. George D. Prentice, who was the sober-minded New England-born editor of the Louisville Journal, reported that on election days in Kentucky, whiskey and apple toddy flowed through the streets like the Euphrates River through ancient Babylon. Oh, that's lyrical stuff. Lyrical stuff. Prentice, after witnessing his first Kentucky election, said that it had made him, quote, a confirmed believer in the doctrine of total depravity. That's a high compliment. Now, Kentuckians have always had a reputation as hard fighters and hard drinkers. Andrew Jackson declared famously, "I have never seen a Kentuckian in my life without a gun, a pack of cards, and a bottle of whiskey." I haven't either, come to think of it. He might have been talking about Henry Clay, Kentucky's greatest statesman ever. He was a staunch Whig, as you history students know, and was very fond of the fruit of the vine. The Democrats claimed that Henry Clay had a personal flag. It was a brandy bottle, presumably empty, superimposed over a set of dueling pistols. There's a famous cartoon from one of his presidential races which shows Clay and his buddies playing cards, drinking, vomiting out of the windows onto pedestrians below in Lexington. You thought politics is rough today. That is a fact. That is a fact. Governor Augustus Owsley Stanley, and I'll talk more about him in just a minute, enjoyed his toddy immensely. Dr. Clark wrote of Governor Stanley, "Sufficiently fired with Old Crow, he could make his voice heard across the narrow waste of Kentucky." Dr. Clark could write as well as he spoke. Have you ever had the privilege of hearing him speak? Oh, what a tremendous historian he was. Of course, most of Kentucky history he lived. He was at least 300 when he died, wasn't he? Actually, 101, to be back. Doubtless, Governor Stanley would have appreciated a Kentucky breakfast. A Kentucky breakfast. It is a liquid feast. You do not serve bacon or eggs or ham or grits or biscuits or sweet milk gravy. It consists of a quart of bourbon, a steak, and a coon dog. What's the dog for? He eats the steak. Then there is the tale of Bill Bush and Brother Pete Legg. Now, Brother Pete Legg was an old-time Campbellite preacher over in Zachariah in Lee County. And Bill was on the porch one day reading his Bible, and Brother Pete came by. "Good morning, Brother Bill. I am glad to see you're reading the scriptures this fine morning." "Thank you, Brother Pete," he replied, "but I'm afraid appearances are deceiving. To tell you the truth, I have just ordered a gallon of whiskey from Brown Forman in Louisville, and I'm looking in the Bible to see how to spell Zachariah." Now, here is one. I always toss this out to my students, especially those who take philosophy, because this is a real moral conundrum in Kentucky. It really is. I want you to think about this. Give this some serious thought. And that is the simple question: once you're bought fair and square, are you morally obliged to stay bought? That's a tough question. It's a tough issue. It really is. Well, this was told to my friend of mine in Graves County in the Simsonia precinct. Y'all know where Simsonia is? North Graves County, Slab Town. Yes. Well, this is in the secret ballot era. This young man was going down the streets of Simsonia, and this candidate walked up to him and bought him fair and square. $5 and a half pint of whiskey. That was the going rate. And the boy took it and went home, and he thought, "I don't like this guy. I never have liked him. But he's bought me fair and square. What am I to do?" Well, he had a wise uncle. They're always helpful, aren't they, wise uncles? And he went to his wise uncle and says, "Uncle, what should I do? What should I do?" And after hearing the story, the uncle pondered a few moments and said, "Here is what you do. You spend his money. You drink his whiskey. You go behind the curtain and vote for whoever you want to. But, you better pray like hell that SOB gets one vote in your precinct." That is a moral conundrum. Well, in Kentucky, elections could be so messy because you never know who's going to win one. So you make sure that your candidate wins one. In my Kentucky history class, I use Lowell Harris and Jim Clotter's book, A New History of Kentucky. Duane, you use that one. It's a fantastic book. Jim Clotter is our state historian, teaches at Georgetown. Lowell Harrison taught at Western for years. He has gone to the great history classroom in the sky, in any event. But here is this is an official Kentucky poll book. These are the names duly registered: Mr. A. Apple, B. Beans, C. Corn, P. Pear, P. Plum, R. Raspberry, B. Broom, F. Fence, and H. Hog. These are all duly registered voters in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Now, of course, faking poll booth, that takes a lot of trouble. It really does. It takes a lot of trouble to fake a poll booth. Over in Logan County, Doc Beecham was the political boss over there for years, and Doc never bothered to do that. That was just too much trouble. And Al Smith, who was the great host of Comment on Kentucky, told me this story years ago. There was this young fellow that Doc had hired to watch this certain precinct in Logan County. And so on election night, this boy is watching this precinct, and it's going against Doc's candidate. And the boy is really scared. He thinks, "Doc's going to fire me for this. That Doc won't put up with this. I'm not delivering my precinct." And so with great trepidation, this young man got on the phone and called Doc and said, "Doc, this is so-and-so from the such-and-such precinct. I hate to tell you, it's not going our way." Doc said, "Who'd you say you were?" He told him, "What precinct?" "Oh, we don't count that one. Don't bother with that one." That's Doc Beecham. And now to conclude this with what I consider to be the greatest of all political stories. It has a moral to it. This took place during the 1915 governor's race between the Democrat Augustus Owsley Stanley of Henderson and the Republican Edwin P. Morrow of Somerset. They were both tremendous public speakers. And a man from Henderson told me that his grandfather told him Stanley always opened his speeches in the following manner: "My name is Augustus Owsley Stanley. I am from Henderson, Kentucky, where the cypress trees grow so tall that the topmost branches tickle the feet of Democratic angels in heaven, and where the roots grow so deep that they scratch the bald heads of Republican senators in hell." That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Good stuff. These two fellows were the best of friends, and that's my moral here. They really liked each other. They traveled this state from one end to the other together. They rode in the same train cars. They stayed in the same hotel room to cut down on expenses. They ate together. They drank from the same bottle. They would go out on the stump and tear each other a brand new one, as we say in Kentucky. If you don't know brand new what, see me after. This is kind of a PG audience. And then they'd go have a drink and laugh about it. And that's why this campaign is such a cautionary tale for today. This is what politics ought to be. The other guy is not Satan. He's just someone who doesn't happen to agree with you. He's an American like you. He's a Kentuckian like you. And that's where these two fellows were. And this is the truth. This is not made up. These two men were the best of friends. Well, to remind you, the three elements one last time: bombast, burgoo, and bourbon. And this is where it all comes together. They met on the campaign trail on a very hot day.
and their host had been plying them with enormous quantities of burgoo and bourbon. Now, in Kentucky, we take our bourbon two fingers. Have you heard that, two fingers of bourbon? Here it is. Or sometimes like that, you know. It depends on how thirsty you are. That's two fingers, yeah, yeah. Well, these two old birds had been consuming huge quantities of this stuff. And then the time came for them to speak. And they mounted the podium. And Mara went first. And according to eyewitness accounts, he gave a reasonably coherent speech, considering what he had done to himself. And with great, great relief and great thankfulness, he sat down. And then it was Stanley's turn. He was about this far from the podium. He rose from his chair and could go no further. He couldn't go forward. He couldn't go backwards. He was just standing there, stock still. The podium began to spin to the right, then to the left, and on its edge. And he's doing everything he can to hold himself erect. And then, the Civil War breaks out in his stomach. It's Perryville and Mill Springs and all these battles all rolling into one, and his stomach begins to roil. And then the armies begin to fight upward, and they're coming up, and he's thinking, I can't stop this. I can't stop this. And he didn't. And just before the eruption, he spun backwards and threw up off the back of the platform in front of God and everyone else. Morrow is sitting there thinking, thank you, Jesus. I've won this election. This guy is really sharp. He's a real talker, but he can't talk himself out of this one. He has done this disgusting thing in front of all these witnesses, in front of the media. He might as well just go home, just quit the campaign, just go home right now. Well, I'm here to tell you, folks, that surrender is a word unknown to A.O. Stanley. Having divested himself of that awful stuff, he is now able to ambulate to the podium. Still alcohol fogged, but he is ambulatory at this point. He goes to the podium, he takes his left hand, he puts it here, and he takes his right hand and puts it here, steadies himself, looks out over the crowd and says, gentlemen, women can't vote in Kentucky in 1915. Gentlemen, he says, I wish to apologize to you from the bottom of my heart for that disgusting display you have just witnessed. But you see, I couldn't help it. Every time I hear Ed Morrow speak, it makes me sick at my stomach. And the crowd roared with approval, and he got elected. I ran across that story years ago. I forgot where I found it, but it was not attributed. Now, of course, historians, journalists, we're the same. Attribution, attribution, attribution. You've got to, where did this come from? And I thought, who would know? Dr. Thomas D. Clark would know. So I phoned him up in Lexington. We used to talk on the phone from time to time. I said, Dr. Clark, calling you from Paducah, you obviously know the story of Stanley Morrow and the throwing up. Oh, yeah, yeah. I said, I have seen this story, but there's no attribution. Where did you get it? He said, Stanley told me himself. That's a primary source right there. Dr. Clark lived to be 101 years old. He knew every Kentucky governor going back to Stanley. Of course, now, Governor Stanley lived to be 91, to be honest with you. After he was out of office, he wound up as a lawyer in Washington, as did Ed Morrow. And they would get together once a week at each other's house, and they would have a meal, retire to their studies, smoke cigars, drink whiskey, and talk Kentucky politics. There's a wonderful article that my wife found me from the Courier Journal written in 1950 about, it was an interview with A.O. Stanley, lived to be 91 years old, died in 1950. Unfortunately, Morrow died much earlier, 15 years before. And Stanley told this reporter, I still grieve for my friend. My life has never been the same. He said, I loved him more than any man in the world.
and he's gone. He was my friend. Dr. Clark also told me this story about Stanley. He was out of office, and there was a gathering of ex-governors in Louisville. There were six of them, august ex-governors of Kentucky, all six of them. He walks in the room. He says, "Fellows, there's two things I've had in my life I never want again." "What's that, Owsley?" they said. He smiled and said, "Gonorrhea and the governorship of Kentucky." I truly believe if we had more politicians like that, we'd get a much better turnout. The next time you're in Frankfort, I encourage you to visit the cemetery there in Frankfort. Just about anybody who was anything in Kentucky is buried there. And I have paid homage at the graves of both these men, Governor Morrow, who was later elected, and Governor Stanley. The cemetery closes at dusk, but I've got a pretty good idea that in the wee hours of the morning, their spirits rise from these graves and they match bombast and they slurp burgoo and they clink their glasses with bourbon. God bless the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and thank you all for coming this evening.